base consciousness is back as the alert, aware field of presence. And that is the determining factor in any human relationship, whether space consciousness is still present, whether there is space in the relationship, whether there is space in you in the relationship, or whether you are absorbed totally in object consciousness. And that's any kind of relationship. The question is, are you there as space? Is there a depth, a space from where you relate? It begins with the ability to listen to the other person. That is very closely related to being present, to listen in that alertness, no matter what words are coming out of the other person's mouth, and whether it's in business relationship or whether it is in your personal relationship, or whether it's in a relationship that is very fleeting, very short encounters in an elevator, maybe just a few words are spoken, in a shop, in a restaurant with a waiter. And it all comes down to a moment of no thought, just alert, spacious presence. With your partner, listening to him or her, somebody who comes to you with in an agitated state, totally absorbed by some life situation. This just happened, you can't. And the world will draw you in, want to draw you in to complete identification again with things. You remember we mentioned the word things, meaning not just physical things, but including physical things. Some people's attention is totally into physical things. Their belongings, their house, their car, their dog, their... That pull is very strong, and that's the challenge. The world wants to, and the world is ultimately the human mind, becomes externalized as the world out there, wants to draw you back into total identification with object consciousness, objects. This matters. This is so important. And I'm always amazed what kind of things people make important in their lives. How ultimately insignificant the things are that they make important, more important than their state of consciousness, they're more important than peace, more important. The tiniest things can assume an importance that you give the power away to things, you give them the power to make you unhappy. And what kind of things people give that power to is just amazing. ephemeral, fleeting things and situations that are here one day, gone the next. Things that would pop even if you discovered you had a serious illness or you have an accident, which sometimes can be a great awakening, things that would pop like a soap bubble and their unimportance would be revealed if somebody told you you have a serious illness and you had to be concerned with all that. Suddenly it has no significance whatsoever. The heavy problems that you had been carrying around dissolved at once. This is why for some people a serious illness is the great awakening. Out of total immersion in object consciousness. There is no guarantee that the illness will awaken you because it could add a further heavy object to your mind, the concept of me being seriously ill, which would add a further heavy thought form to identify with to your mind. That is possible too. But potentially, an illness has the ability to awaken you and to reveal to you that which is at best relatively important. And the truth is, anything in this world of form, of things, is relatively important. And your career, your possessions, your relationships, what you have achieved or not achieved, what you know or you don't know, things that people derive their sense of self from, all relatively important. Yes, it's relatively important whether I live in the street, sleep on park benches, or I have a nice home. Yes, it makes a difference in the realm of relativity. But you can be awake on the park bench as you can be awake in a nice home. And some people awakened precisely there after losing things. Things to identify with. So there's only one thing that matters absolutely in one's life. Then the rest of your life is recognized as relative. It's not that you ignore it, but you recognize that the importance is only relative. And the one thing that matters, and Jesus used those words too, there's only one thing that matters, he said to Martha in the story of Mary and Martha, two women or two sisters. He's visiting and one is extremely busy. Let's get this done and that done. We have to get the meal ready. Look, he's here. He's visiting us. He's come and help me get the meal. This needs to be done. Peel the potatoes. Do this. And Mary wasn't doing anything. She was just sitting there looking at Jesus. And Martha says, why don't you tell her to help me? And Jesus wasn't really concerned whether when the food would be on the table or whether it would be on the table. He said, Mary, there's only one thing that really matters. This is a free translation. And Mary has chosen that one thing that really matters. Now, when you look at modern theologians, they can't tolerate that statement, and they do whatever they can to reinterpret that. He didn't really mean that. another simple way of putting it is you forget that the only thing that really matters is your state of consciousness, nothing else. If that's not right, nothing out there is going to be right. And you're not going to be of much help to anybody. To see what is primary, that is not selfish, far beyond it, it's the opposite of selfish, to recognize that. And then, what is so important to have the power to make me unhappy?